Welcome back to another episode of Life Sci AI, the podcast series. And as we are embarking on series 5, now after a really interesting first episode with Doppler and in the London office, we're back onto Zoom because we have our second guest on the series is from France. And it's very interesting as well, because it's our first femtech product that we've had on the podcast. It's only taken 5 series to get here. apologies for that. But it's also a super, super exciting day for them as well. So we're joined by the CEO of Sonio, Cecil Brosset. And Sonio are a Paris-based startup who have just raised, as we record today, it's been announced in the media, 13 million euros in Series A. And the aim of Sonio is to leverage technology to improve women's health by enhancing access to care. And a lot of that is around pregnancy screening at the moment with their platform. So pleasure to have you on the podcast, and we have lots of really fun things and interesting thought-provoking topics to discuss, not only around Sonio the company, but in general around hiring and healthcare, and how we can create a really impactful company as well from scratch. So really excited to have you on. Welcome to the podcast, Cecil.
Thanks, Nick. Super happy to be here with you.
It'd be great for you to first start off by giving a little bit of an introduction in a deeper sense into what you're doing. And as ever, I'll always attach that to asking, what is your purpose?
Yeah, great. Happy to start with that. So I think I've been driven, to create Sonio by lots of different aspects of my life. My background is actually a business. I've done strategy consulting, then I've joined the French Public Investment Bank, where I actually encountered the venture world, and I met with the whole of French tech that I contributed to build at the time as one of the directors of the innovation division of VPI, so this French Public Investment Bank, and I kind of met with all those entrepreneurs, and I kind of realized that health tech was actually a great movement that was emerging, and where technology could actually serve a purpose that would be health. And I was both driven by being an entrepreneur myself. I was always trying to build things, amazing things, as part of a larger corporation. But I think I had never actually done it myself from scratch. And health has always been super important to me. I come from a family of doctors, and my mom, my dad, my brother, my uncles. I always hesitated to actually drop everything and start medical school. And I've always wanted to do things with purpose. That's the reason why I quit Bain, after my 5 years there. That's why I joined BPI, because I thought it would be impactful for the ecosystem, but really having an impact on, patients and clinical outcomes really was very dear to my heart. And so when I had the chance to actually meet with amazing innovators, like the people I met at Ecole Polytechnique, those data scientists, and at Hospital Necker, so the physicians that were such amazing leaders in fecal medicine, I thought, wow, what other topic could I take for my own startup? As a mom, I'm also a mother of two. I thought really helping pregnant women to get better access to care during pregnancy, and really sorting that kind of problems is so close to my dream. It is the adventure that I want to jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, Tom, he was on the previous episode, he started out in VCs and fundraising, and then found his purpose through an experience of his brother, and realizing that the point of care that his brother was going through wasn't quite what it could be. So why did you particularly look at, you know, pregnancy and that sort of stage of women's health?
So again, basically, it's more about encountering people, like really serendipity. I met with tons of different people. I looked into mental health at some point, which I found quite interesting, with all different challenges. I looked into, like, you know, cardiology at some point, but really I felt much more moved by, you know, this like women's health aspect.
Yeah.
I know pretty well. It's an area that's, you know, not dealt with by many people, probably also because there are not so many, you know, female entrepreneurs and female CEOs. So it really felt so right. And also, I guess the project was at the right stage. Like, it was an R&D project when I met with those doctors and mathematicians, and we were super complimentary. I was the right person at the right time. I was moved by the project. And again, I was just shocked by the fact that there was no technology, really, recent modern technology in this particular industry, in this particular therapeutic area, where you know, in medical imaging, you have a lot of different AI solutions already for radiology, for example. It's a huge market, but women's health is much more like of a vertical where people don't really look into. It's quite complex also.
Yeah. Like,
quite complex. So we really needed to be quite bold and go after that. And I don't know, I just like this idea of an open ocean where we had to build everything.
Yeah, no, and not many people sort of have that, I guess, the wide berth in a certain therapeutic area where there is nothing for it. So perhaps those that aren't familiar with the care pathway in this therapeutic area, what does that look like? And why did you foresee a wide area, a wide ocean, as you said, to really make an impact? And where does your product sit in that journey?
Yeah, great question. It was kind of a challenge at the beginning to convince that we had enough space, and especially to convince VCs. But I guess my pitch was always the same, and now it's getting confirmed, is that because there's no solution for those practitioners, we have an edge to be building the kind of one-stop platform that will kind of answer all the pain points of those practitioners. So basically, be their daily software that they use, so to manage their practice entirely, so connecting to the EMR and to the billing system, you know, end to end, and really providing this workflow solution that will, you know, streamline their administrative tasks. And so AI is also a great way to provide efficiency gains, because then what we can do with, you know, fecal ultrasound examinations is that we collect those images real time, you know, being in the cloud and being like machine agnostic, we can get these images as they scan, and we can build the report automatically, which saves a lot of time, you know, like writing down, you know, reports, preparing it beforehand, finalizing it afterwards. And it's also prone to errors the way it's done right now. So we thought it's a great thing to be able to provide a one-stop platform that will bring the workflow solution, really save administrative, save time doing administrative tasks, and at the same time provide this clinical guidance and like securing the practitioners, both sonographers that are acquiring the images, but also readers. So we do those like clinical alerts that lots of, you know, medical imaging AIs do. But I think a specialty is that we really embed that into the daily, you know, workflow solution that allows to enter the market really easily, because we are replacing, you know, outdated reporting solutions, and really bringing a new generation of software on the market thanks to AI in a way.
Yeah. So, like, if you were to look at other, you know, clinical imaging pathways, you've got, you know, Gleamer, for example, with, you know, their great news recently with their bone view, and you've got Brainomics with their e-stroke, and loads of other areas where there've been successful imaging companies put out there. Those weren't so end-to-end, they were more inputted into the normal workflows of a radiologist. So was it, did your pathway need to have an end-to-end for a successful uptake of technology, or because it was, you know, maybe the ocean was so wide, you thought we can actually upskill and use technology in more areas than just the diagnostics?
Yeah, I guess it was linked to the structure of the market. You know, the fact that, you know, women's health groups are actually consolidating right now. And their specialty is going to be, is going to stay separate from general imaging and radiology, we believe, because, you know, it's so complex, you know. When you take, you know, an ultrasound of a fetus, you need to gather 50, 60 images. It's also like a dynamic exercise. That's why when you look at, you know, AIs in imaging, it's usually, you know, X-rays or you know, like or CTs or stuff like that,
tomography.
But like ultrasound, especially if you go ultrasound, is super complex. And that's it's done today by obstetricians themselves, so MFMs, and like they review images, and you have like specialized sonographers actually providing the images. So, and now these guys are actually getting consolidated, but again vertically. So they are, you have like large corporations that are being created, buying back small practices. And this size effect, as well as the fact that you need to homogenize the quality of the examinations, you know, and to make sure that you respect the guidelines, it gave us kind of a niche to actually build the right product for these guys. And so we were kind of agnostic of, you know, do we actually, we just wanted to build the best product. We didn't think about, let's copy any other AI companies that just bring the AI and integrate with the machines. We said, okay, what do they need? They need an easy workflow solution that's going to be automated. And that's where we can bring the most support. So that's why we built it that way. We're looking at our market's needs.
So, and then you, with your solution, what is the impact on the patient? How is there, is there tangible insights you can give now to knowing what impact you're making?
Totally. So the figure that we like to talk about is that 50% of anomalies are not detected before birth through ultrasound. So basically, it means that 3% of babies today in developed countries, are born with a congenital malformation, and you can double that number in developing countries. You also have close to 300,000 mothers that die every year during pregnancy or at birth from preventable causes. So basically, the impact we want to have is to really make sure that all the anomalies that we can detect prenatally are actually detected. For some of them, it's going to change the life of the baby entirely. Like some heart malformations, they can be, you know, they can get surgery in the first hours after birth, and it can save the life of this baby that's going to grow into an adult and have a happy life. You have also some other things that you can really help solve entirely, like diaphragmatic hernias, or you can also reassure on lots of signs that can be a little bit scary, but are actually not a big problem if they are not associated. Also, like causes of death for mothers are very often, you know, linked to placenta being like kind of wrongly positioned. Those are things that we can definitely have an impact on. And save lives once again. So right now we don't have, you know, we haven't stepped back enough in order to say we're going to reduce number of anomalies being missed. But what we know for sure is that we multiply by two the chances of getting a complete exam, so not forgetting an image. And also making sure that the images that you take are actually correct ones. So where you can see all the structures that you should be seeing. The next step is really to measure, you know, how many anomalies are going to be not missed thanks to Sonio. But for now, just bringing more, again, security to the practitioners, helping them getting rid of some, you know, bureaucratic work, but also getting some pressure out of their shoulders because they're going to have a second opinion on the images that they take, should really help, you know, and leverage practitioners at a time where there's a strong shortage, both in terms of OBGYNs, MFMs, and sonographers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way technology can be used to, I don't know if plugging the gap is the right word to use, but definitely be part of a workforce solution across healthcare, across the world, is going to be a common thread, I think, through this series. We heard it on the last episode with Docla and for yourself there saying around the sudden the clinicians in your therapeutic area, if it means they can have sort of, you know, faster work streams, less stress, you know, more security in the decisions they're making, they'll be able to make better decisions and also, you know, increase the quality of care that they have as well. And also get them to doing what they want to do, which is, you know, caring for people. And then at the end of the day,
Exactly. I think it's always a wrong question that people are asking when they say, okay, is AI going to replace practitioners? Obviously not, you know, but they just want to be more focused on patient and not at all on, building reportings. What we expect them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I will never forget listening to someone at a conference, I think it was a VC, and he was saying his father was the same as a GP in America. And when he sort of retired about 10-15 years ago, he didn't know most of the people by name, but when he started, he knew all of his patients by name because everyone would come in, you'd have your doctor, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's completely different in lots of places of the world. And you're so right. AI is going to be there to assist clinicians doing what they do best, which is being human to human care at the end of the day. But that also does mean, but we can go into this later, that also does mean where technology can pick up the slack, where you don't need human to human care. Remote patient monitoring or something like that, so you don't always have to go to a hospital all the time where you can do it in the community. But as we said at the start of the episode, extremely exciting day for you, the day that we're recording this in the middle of July, because you have just announced in the media your Series A funding, so massive congratulations. I'm sure you want to say something about that and what it'll mean for yourselves and some initial plans and looking over the big pond.
Absolutely. We are thrilled. I think it's the an achievement that really kind of validates all the efforts that we've put together over the last three years. We're still a young company, but I think we've really executed quite fast. And we are really now in a position where we can secure leadership in our field. We have the right product market fit now, and so we can accelerate. Of course, it's been a great pleasure to be able to find, you know, investors that understood so well what our strategy was, you know, where we wanted to go, that really supported the team. Also, I think we're going to talk about the team a bit later on, but we are a very, you know, diverse, seasoned team. And I think, we actually managed to demonstrate that to our investors, and that's what they actually liked. So, and one of the lead investor is Cross Border Impact Ventures, so a North American fund, you know, from Canada. And it's an impact-driven fund, so really investing only in impact companies, only in cross-border companies, so having projects to grow internationally, which is our case. Yeah. So I think we found the perfect match with CDIB at the same time as we were supported by, you know, Europe and EIC in particular. Yeah. So we managed to, again, put all those players together, North American, European, our historic investors, Elia, BPI, and One Hack Time. And I think it kind of created the great, best environment for us to really, thrive over the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just before we go into what that might look like for you, it's a really interesting day as well, because this morning there's a few graphics and reports floating around again of digital health funding. Mm-hmm. And the difference between the years 2020, 2021, 2022, and this year, and the funding is down in H1 compared to the last 2 or 3 years. Naturally, the interest rates, the macroeconomics around the world is challenging. But also, one thing that was really interesting that I heard recently from someone who advises Series A and C sort of groupings who are going for those fundings around digital health, but how to get your company in order effectively and who to go to. They were on a panel with another VC firm, and they were sort of chatting around the difference in the funding streams in 2020, 2021 and now. And even though the money might be less, that the quality of the investment might be higher, you know, because they are the investment firms that are impactful driven, that know around healthcare, that know around the life cycle of creating a company like that. And we might not see as much money, but have those funds that try to make hay while the sun shined and people poured into healthcare during COVID, maybe they're starting to realize it's not as easy as you know, consumer electronics or insurance or you know, e-commerce on it. So yeah. Maybe you want to comment a little bit on that your success, why you've been successful in raising a really phenomenal piece of Series A, and maybe commenting on the importance of your investors and why they are so right for you as a company.
Yeah, it's true that we did not expect this round to go as well as fast. so it's pretty surprising, and we're super grateful that it happened to us so easily in a context where we can only just, you know, witness how things are. So I think what happened is that we got a lot of visibility and we gained credibility thanks to EIC Accelerator. So we won this, you know, contest that's like super selective end of last year. And so basically what it means is that it's only for deep tech companies. So I guess we managed to prove to this very, again, selective committee that we had a great technology that could have an immense impact on the world and on beneficiaries. Mm. And so that's why they committed to finance our R&D with 2.5 million euro in grants. So that gave us a lot of visibility, especially because they committed to being part of the Series A with some equity, you know, as long as we would, you know, make sure that we gather around with a serious lead. And so that was amazing. And I think that's what maybe shed some light on us and why, you know, CBIB kind of knocks at the door. And so when they arrived, we're like, okay, you seem great. You know, you're focused on women's and children's health. So it couldn't be a better fit. Again,
yeah.
Impact-driven, cross-border companies only. It's North American. It seemed just perfect for us.
Yeah.
And led by two managing partners that are, you know, women. So again, they get along quite well.
Yeah.
And now, again, it was kind of too early. So we just, you know, kept in touch, and then at some point we're just like, okay, they believe in us succeeding in like getting this FDA clearance that we still don't have, but it's expected soon. So I guess we built a level of trust that was high enough so that we could do the Series A a little bit in advance versus the plan. And again, I think what they told us is that they are focused on this women's health vertical. And so they scouted the whole market. And it was actually a great discussion with them, because it was, you know, guys, you're in advance, you know, you're in, you know, in front of competition. So yeah. You need to raise now so you can secure your advantage. And so you shouldn't wait. You should be finishing your product, and you should like take the space because it's yours.
Yeah.
Wow. And it felt super good, you know. And so then once you start talking with an investor like that, that kind of, you know, hunts you when it's not the country.
Yeah.
Again, things happen quite naturally, and it's a great feeling. So I can just be grateful for everything that this partnership is going to open to us. Again, access to the North American market, which is one of the, you know, main purposes of the race. But also, again, really, I think reaffirm the mission that we're pursuing. You know, we're not just a business-driven company; we're a mission-driven company. We want to have impact in the whole world, not just the US and Europe. We want to have an impact on like low-income countries, and having a partner that really understands that and values that was also, you know, key for us to seal this partnership.
Yeah, I mean, that's so right around, especially when it's Series A, having partners that are partners rather than chasing an extra 3, 4, 5 million euros or dollars is so important, because you also need the resolve, the guidance, the, you know, the strategy to get to Series B and Series C, because that's what you're all in it for, right? Because that's when you'll see the wide impact that you'll have, and making a company that has the impact on women's health, which you want it to do. It's not going to do it at Series A, you know, it has a small impact, but you want to get it to the end, and you're going to get there with the right individuals there the whole way. The number is amazing, but it's probably more who you've got on board, I reckon, is the super exciting thing for yourselves.
Totally. And I think we're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep looking for, you know, great people to help us build the business and build the clinical asset. So we are finalizing, you know, a scientific advisory board to have like the right, like key opinion leaders worldwide, you know, work on us on our clinical key questions. Same thing, you know, for, you know, the business, we're gonna need advisors, you know, at the top level to help us really grow into the US market and some other markets. So I think the people that you get on board is just definitely the most important thing, you know, in your team and in your board and like advisory groups. This is what really matters the most.
And great, probably, for us to move on to it now and talking about the team and the people that you've brought in. And it's how we first started the conversation. I think it was sort of 8, 10 weeks ago when we first started speaking. And talk to us a little bit about your philosophy of building a company.
Yeah, I think it's, at first, it was not very, formalized in my head.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a feeling I had, and I heard a lot of VCs said that anyway, team comes first. Team is kind of the key of success.
Yeah.
And I knew that building like a medical device software required, you know, skills that were like, you know, very, very difficult to gather, because you need people from very different fields.
Yeah.
And I had this idea that I cannot have the best tech if I hire a CTO from a health company, because, you know, health tech and like healthcare software are not, you know, mature yet. So I needed to get people in AI, best people, yes, in clinical. I think we're breaking a little bit. I don't know if you're still there.
Yeah, just just want to go back to, we meant we lost you at CTO.
I think sorry,
broke a little bit. No, don't worry.
So I knew I had to kind of go and hunt for like the best people in their fields, and I knew that, you know, I wanted the best technology possible, state-of-the-art, you know, software technology. I wanted the product, you know, I wanted people to understand, you know, users' pain points and make sure we do the right product. And I wanted to have people from the field, like people that, you know, understood how to sell to a doctor, what's an ultrasound system, you know, and of course the best AI and the best clinicians. So this is how we kind of put the group together. And I was not afraid of not being kind of a the only founder. I kind of very early on decided to bring in, you know, late founders. So first we were just Remy and myself, so the CSO, and then we brought in CTO, CPO, and a chief business development officer. You know, so Doug Marsh is, you know, she's built the first reporting system for Distrial 25 years ago and like sold it to GE.
Yeah.
So she basically
best of the best.
In this world, and also like you know, she's German, she brings that type of you know, differentiation, you know, she's and she's like in her late 50s, so she also brings like a different perspective. And then we have Deepak, our CTO, he's Indian, and he's really from the tech field. We have David, CPO, now COO as well, also from the tech world, like Criteo, Legal Start, you know, those like French companies where he learned how to work with AI, but really in the tech field.
Yeah.
And then Remy, like he was like Remy Besson at CSO, was like at the end of his PhD, never, you know, worked in a company, but still like passionate about, you know, clinical AI.
Yeah.
And me again, like coming from a different background. So, and this diversity in skills, but also in nationalities and like, you know, generation, gender, I think really brings a lot to the company.
Yeah.
Brings complexity, that's for sure. But it's, I think this is one of the reasons why we can succeed. And
yeah,
we kind of then define that as a kind of part of the Sonios culture.
Yeah.
And so now we keep hiring people that are from very different backgrounds. Mm. And I think it really brings value to the company.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. And I was asked sort of like a similar-ish question when I was talking at London Tech Week around hiring and around the need of investing. It was a kind of a question into investing in certain founders from underserved communities, be that from anywhere in the world. And as someone that wasn't an investor, I was the only non-investor on the panel. I don't know how I got on the panel, but I sort of answered the question around the ripple effect when someone like yourself is hiring for somebody. And I say, so you have the ripple effect of a founder on a community that they have come from, and the economic multiplier effect and the social impact multiplier effect of that. But I flip it and I say, you have the exact same theory when you're hiring for a team. So if you hire someone from a different background, a different lived experience, you know, might have the same coding, the same sales skills, the same clinical understanding, but if you have different lived experiences, you're going to have a positive ripple effect through not only that team, but the whole business as well. And you're going to solve problems in really different ways, but a really exciting way, because everyone needs to know their stuff, but everyone should know their stuff in a bit of a different way. And that's what I think really makes a really impactful company. And is one thing that when, you know, we hire for clients at Cypro is something that we really understand and look to have value adds in more than just the I guess the skill set that we're giving to when building these early stage companies that we do. And so when it comes to how you've done that early on in sort of your growth phase between sort of 2021 and 2022, you know, when you're going, because that's when sort of around you got your CE marking, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of going through those phases, how did you balance the need to get, I guess, clinical validation, expertise in, and then also creating a highly diverse team, really mixed from different lived experiences and what I would call cognitively diverse as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know how we've done that. It's more, I guess it's something you have within you or that you don't have within you at the beginning. You know, I've seen how like consulting, for example, could like bring together very similar people with very similar and then like train them into robots to actually act the same way. And I don't know, when I was in that mold, I could feel also that I was a bit different. You know, I was a bit intuitive. I was really into, I don't know, like connecting with the people and really judging also with my guts. And I guess that's how I've been working with like those people that I hired at the beginning. I think it's a question of trust also at some point, like trusting your instincts, really having kind of a checklist of what are the hard skills that I absolutely need. But then, you know, I need people that can fit into this culture of being super entrepreneurial. That's one of the most that are driven by the mission. And, yeah. And this really is a no-go for us when we hire, if, you know, there's no specific interest in women's health or health or in doing something for good.
Yeah.
It's kind of a blocker, because then again, people are going to be driven by just, you know, delivering the results, which is very important, but not only. So
mission-driven,
I think it's also about communication and how, you know, we see these people, you know, fit in the team. One of the things that are super important to me is that we really respect people the way they are. We respect them with their talents. And so we don't judge them for very short-term results. We give them time to thrive. We give them time within time off. I know it's super difficult to accept in an environment where we are VC backed and, you know, every penny counts. And so, you're super afraid if someone wants to go on a leave, or, you know, there's like a pregnancy, you know. But we cannot be like that. You know, we cannot be like that, because we are mission driven. We want to build something, you know, in a duration that's like, you know, for many years to come. So we want to keep the people with us, and they are very rare experts. So hiring takes so much energy, you know, that we'd rather bet on someone and then give this person the chance to really build a life for himself or herself also outside of work.
And
on all fronts, and make sure that these people that we've invested in, they actually stick with us, in time. And I know it seems like a bit like a bullshit talk, because everyone talks about like team's well-being and stuff, but we are actually put in place very like strong processes to support that what we're doing is not just about but actually we're doing things. So we have, for example, a parental policy that's quite, you know, I think interesting and quite special for a company our stage, because we really pay like full salary. We make like the leave almost compulsory for the partner, so that, like the balance. We're trying to really put in place practical things to make sure that people are not burnt out. Like the review processes are really, really frequent. So we do like self-reviews so that people have time to do some introspections. So we're really very consistent about it. And I'm hoping it's going to pay. I know it's going to pay off.
But I think setting the pillars out early, and what you want to achieve and how you will achieve them, and being people first, is so important. And you're right, a lot of people will say they're people first, but saying it is one thing, and actually having the policies and processes at an early stage at a Series A company is another thing. For it, there are some superb companies that we work with at Series A and Series B phase, which have a couple of the similar things you mentioned there. And they just know that they're investing in the people. And guess what? People don't leave those companies. You know, they stay well, they stay happy. And those that are a little bit more transactional, I guess, have more transactional employees for it. And then from a commercial point of view, and, you know, when you're thinking about balancing the social impact versus the profit, actually, if you increase the social impact of your employees, the profit will rise as well. Because one of the biggest challenges with hiring and retention is if someone leaves after you've just spent money training them up, or if they've been there for 2 or 3 years and they kind of become a bit of a silo subject matter expert, you've got a problem with the knowledge transfer and retraining and sort of the hidden costs of that are much higher than people really realize, versus, you know, giving someone just more leave, having more reviews, you know, just actually thinking about when you are investing so much in a company, how much does a company invest in you back, and having a two-way street. So yeah, what you're creating is something special. So
yeah, we are happy about that. And I think it's a lot of work. It's also, I guess, the other thing is that it takes time and effort to actually structure those things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're growing so fast, it's always a question of bargain. What do I not do? Because I can't do everything. Yeah. And I think that's the difficult part is, do I value this enough so that I'm going to spend time and effort and money on this? Mm. And this is why also I want to thank, you know, my head of people, Clément Moreau, because he's really embodying this culture and those values. Yeah. And it was really important for me to have a head of people that was strong. And again, it was a bet that we've done with him because he had no HR background.
Yeah.
And he's just perfect. You know, he's the right guy for the situation. So again, that's intuition is something that is absolutely key in this field.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. If you have an amazing head of people, director of people, no matter what you call it in your companies, that are driven by the people at the end of the day, not always by the commercial end. You know, they're the head of the people. They should be championing the people and doing what's right for them, not always with a commercial slant to it. So that's epic.
And HR, I think it's a great, you know, field, because you need to be very structured, because you need to put in place, you know, the right processes, you know, both for hiring and for reviewing people.
Yeah.
And retaining them, making sure that they grow. So you need to be super processed and so an analytical guy. At the same time, you need to really feel the people and be empathetic and really, you know, talk to people, convey the right messages. And it's really difficult to find the right balance and a mix. You know, yeah, those are like weird animals. And you know, that's what I love with Clément. I think that's what we found. I think if we succeed in our mission, it's going to be partly thanks to him, and thanks to all the people he's going to be able to convince and join.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this episode. There's so much more that I could take off and talk to you about for hours and hours and hours. You know, super exciting time, and watch out the USA, because Sunio is coming, and the rest of Europe definitely will know about you across the next 6 to 12 months. But I know you're pretty active as well on social media and such, so I'm sure people can follow up with you on LinkedIn and things like that on your company website, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Sunio is coming.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And thank you all for listening and watching, if you decided to watch this one on YouTube and our website. And please come back for another episode. But thank you very much for joining us, Cecile.
Thanks, Nick.